Hi there! Welcome to Textures, a podcast about art, design, and entrepreneurship. My name is Valérie Legras. In each episode, I meet with an artist, designer, creator, innovator, individuals who add textures to our world. We discuss how they are able to make it happen. Join me in discovering their world, their work, and how they go about living and leading a life that inspires themselves and others. I have Mariana Massé with me today. She's a photographer with broad experience. Throughout her career, she has covered sports, entertainment, fashion, portraiture, and news for the best, including Getty Images USA. She has captured content around the world. Her portfolio is stunning. Her camera snaps moments in action, moments in time, moments in life. I'm excited to discuss her process. Hi, Mariana. Thank you so much for having me here in your house.
Thanks for having me here.
So we are going to start about where you're from and how you started in your creative journey.
I'm from a very small town in Mississippi called Laurel, south of Jackson. Growing up in a small town was pretty much how you would imagine it. I mean, back in the day when your parents let you ride your bike all around and didn't have to tell them where you were going, and I feel like these kind of things would never happen now in this day and age. So it was a lot of freedom, a lot of time for exploring, and kind of an everyone knows everyone sort of place, which I think as a child was really great, you know, and I enjoyed it. I also knew it was a small town, so I also kind of always had this wanting of like seeing more and getting out and going somewhere different. I think if you grow up in a small town, and anyone else that has, you always have this kind of, you know, you have this vision of like your life and what it's going to be like, and you have some boredom, and you know, you run the same streets and you know the same people and you know there's more out there. And I think I always knew that there was, and I think I knew I wanted to see that and find that. And luckily as a child, like, my parents liked to travel, so they would take us with them often. So I think that early on helped me have a love for travel and seeing new places in the world and having an appreciation for other things out there. So I left Mississippi when I was about 12 years old. We moved to Pensacola, Florida, for a job change for one of my parents. And so ended up going to high school there. And then I went on to the University of Florida from there, and I majored in photojournalism. And I mean, I knew what that was, but I just knew that I liked photography and I knew that I liked writing. And I thought if I could pair the two together, then that would be an ideal profession in whatever way that was going to turn out for me. And I did take photography in high school, and I really took a shine to that. I mean, I never felt like I was the best by any means or the, you know, the star student, but I always knew that I liked it. So at University of Florida, I did photojournalism, and it was great. I mean, I wasn't like top of my class. I wasn't any of those things. I just found it to be interesting, and I liked getting to know the different stories and the different people, and just this way of getting into people's lives, through your profession, I thought was pretty interesting, that people I would meet, complete strangers, would then tell me their stories and like allow me into their lives and with my camera. And that's a pretty rare thing. I mean, you kind of have to get someone to trust you within 30 seconds, you know, or a minute of your time. And that's, I think that taught me a lot, and also taught me to be open and vulnerable and let the people be those things back to me. It's like been a gift, you know, my whole life to get to know people and be in situations that I never thought I'd be in. And
so when you got out of school, you had an internship or you had a job?
I did. Like, I interned at the Gainesville Sun in Florida, at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And I did that for a semester. And then it was summer was coming and they wanted me to stay on. And Gainesville is really hot in the summer. I mean, it's almost unbearable, kind of like New Orleans. And I knew that I didn't want to stay there for the summer. And I wanted, my plan was to move to California. And my parents were you know, kind of not for that. They were like, why are you moving there? You can't just move there without a job. And I was like, I want to go to LA and I want to surf and I want to be at the beach. And I've always loved the ocean and the water. And so that was my plan. But my parents kind of squashed that and said, in order for me to go out there, I had to find a job. So I took my tiny portfolio of 10 pictures and I sent it to different newspapers out there, and never thinking that I would be offered a job. But I was at this, the paper called The Daily Pilot, which was like a subsidiary of the LA Times. So back in that time period, the LA Times had, it had like community news sections. So Newport Beach or Huntington Beach and all these little towns, they would have inserts into the LA Times. So that was The Daily Pilot. So that was Newport Beach, California. So I got this job, told my parents. I think they were a little shocked, as was I. So then they had to let me go. So my mom and I actually took a road trip from Florida and drove out to LA.
Wow.
With all my things. And it was pretty funny. It was like a Thelma and Louise mother-daughter trip. And it was great. Like, we stopped along the way. We saw so many things. And I think they just were, you know, slightly worried to leave their 21-year-old daughter out in California and then say goodbye. But they helped me. I mean, they helped me find an apartment, and I had my newspaper job. And so I started that job, and I loved it. I mean, it was, we covered everything from, you know, spot news to sports to, you know, any kind of festival or any kind of, you know, beautiful scenes, like wild art is what we used to call it, where you would drive around and try to find, you know, a kid playing in a sprinkler on a hot day. And these are the kind of things that, like, people in the community were looking to see, and that was, like, important to them to run in the paper. So it was quite a myriad of things, but I love the changing of it every day. I was always something new, and I had these amazing colleagues that really taught me so much and just inspired me. I mean, from editing to community work and just getting to know everyone in the office, from the writers to the editors. It was like newspaper at its best, I find. And I didn't even know what that was going to be like, and I didn't know I was going to like it as much as I did. But then shortly after that time was kind of like the decline of newspapers in the U.S., I'd say, where they were, a lot of them were closing down, a lot of them were like restructuring. So that happened at ours. Like, I think the Tribune Company came in and bought it. And then from that point, a lot of people were let go, and a lot of people were just, you know, retiring or opting out to take these, you know, chances to get out of the business. And because I was quite young, I think that's one of the reasons why I was, you know, let go, because I didn't have a family, I didn't have anyone I was supporting. And I remember being crushed that I was not going to have this job anymore. And I think I called my dad crying or whatever, and he was like, you got a college degree, like, go find another job. Like, not really a lot of sympathy, and just kind of, you know, pick yourself up and move on. So from that, I started working with agencies, like, quite young, like photo agencies. And at that time, I didn't really know what all that meant, but I just knew that you would go shoot things, and then you could submit them to an agency, and they would basically outsource your photos, and those photos would be bought, and then you would make money that way. So that's kind of how I started in the agency business, like shooting sports for Corbis and red carpet and entertainment for Wire Image. Both of those agencies have since been bought by Getty Images, and so that's kind of how that all transpired. And then agencies kind of became the new newspaper, I'd say. You know, I mean, we always had AP and we always had Reuters, but then you had these bigger agencies coming into play, which they would hire photographers to go cover events, and then those images would get sent out to newspapers and wire services and things of that nature.
So when you go on the red carpet,
yeah,
I guess there is like a lot of
photographers. Yeah.
So first of all, how can you access the red carpet, well, and how are you going to stand out?
It was pretty funny. I mean, I think being young and being just kind of brash and not really understanding like the whole scope of it, like, kept me in it, because I think now I might be too annoyed to even put up with it, because back then it was kind of a circus. And so you would have to get credentialed through a certain agency or through a newspaper or a magazine. So they would, you know, they'd send out the release for a certain movie, and then the agency you worked for would put your name in, and then you would have a spot on the red carpet. Like, they would put a spot for you. And obviously, like, the better the agency or the more higher, you know, if it was like People magazine or something, they would give you a better spot. But sometimes, you know, if you were just starting out, you wouldn't have the best spot. And they had these veterans. I mean, there was people that had been shooting red carpet for, you know, 50 years, and they were, oh, and they were bitter, and they were, they had their spot, and they weren't going to let you in. And lots of things like that, like elbowing you out of the way, blocking you with their cameras, or just making sure like you didn't get a better picture than them. It was pretty, pretty full on. So I did that for a few years. And I mean, I got to see so many things. I mean, like from the, you know, Golden Globes to Academy Awards to just normal everyday run of the mill red carpet premieres. And you just see this, you know, it's like humanity at its finest and all its good and bad. You know, you've got all the red carpet photographers, you've got all the reporters, you've got celebrities ranging in, you know, from A-listers all the way down to people trying to make their way in the world. And this was kind of at the start of like reality TV. So a lot of that was just beginning to be popular. So no one really, I mean, these people would come to the red carpet, and I'm talking back in the day, like Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton, and we'd be like, really? Like, they're, what are they doing here? Like, we got to shoot these people? Like, no, we didn't think they'd sell. Like, we didn't, they weren't really running in the magazines. And it was right when, like, Laguna Beach was starting, like these kind of reality shows with all these kids on it. And we just kind of found it funny. Like, because to us, they weren't celebrities, you know, but now they are. I mean, now like a reality star is basically an A-list celebrity. So it was funny now looking back to see that I was like at the start of that whole scene of that.
So basically you received your kind of order, if I can say that.
Yeah.
You have Getty was going to.
Right. Like they, like, let's say for instance, like the new Quentin Tarantino movie was going to be premiering. So then they would say, okay, like the premiere is Thursday night. So then I knew it started at X time, and I would have to be there like probably like an hour and a half to 2 hours before to get your spot. And then the, you know, people start coming on the carpet and you like shoot all of that. And then you go back home and you would send all of your pictures in, and then like they would send those out to like magazines, newspapers, wire services. And so
do you edit your picture?
Yeah, I would edit them. Okay. Like I would bring them in on the card, and then I would Photoshop them, like, you know, caption them, and then send them in. And so the faster you got them in, the more likely they were to like run in the magazines or things like that. And then having like the distribution from your agency was super helpful. Like that would like catapult your pictures up to the top of the charts. Yes. And you could make a lot of money back then. I mean, on that, it was funny to me that you could make money just by shooting someone's like picture on a carpet, you know, because it wasn't, to me, I didn't feel like that was actually like, you know, a quote unquote like good picture. It was just a picture of a person, and the person was what was making the money for you, you know, whereas like otherwise if you're shooting sports or you're shooting fashion and or something, you have to really work to make that image, or you're finding like the key moment, and these moments were just kind of ready made for you other than like calling out someone's name. Lots of yelling and screaming.
So at that time you are exclusively in LA.
Yeah, I was living in LA, and I stayed out in California for 10 years. So I covered lots of things and sports.
You studied sports?
I did. Time. I shot sport out there. I shot tennis, you know, I shot soccer, I shot football, like all sorts of things. And even in LA, I mean, everything is permeated by celebrity. So even the sports stars are, you know, celebrities there. And it always has this kind of air of, you know, elevated glamour to it, even then. But I always love sport because I just find that it has all the elements of a great picture. I mean, a great story. I mean, you've got a win, you've got a loss, you've got emotions, you've got, you know, excitement. You have all these things coming together in this big arena, and you've got crowd and fans and an atmosphere. I mean, it's pretty magical when that all comes together and you see that. I mean, it can be just like an amazing experience to be a part of as a photographer and as someone in the media.
And so how, you know, what makes a good photographer in LA? Because it's overcrowded.
It's very hard. It's very competitive.
So how do you stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really have to just kind of find your niche and like your, I mean, I would say like you almost have to cultivate a style, and I don't even think that is conscious sometimes. Like, I think for me, it just was who I was and who I am as a person, and that was coming out of my work, and I hope that still does. I hope when people see something that they know that it's mine, or that they know that like it has my stamp on it, or my mark on it. And that's just being an artist, I think, or being part of someone creative, where you just see the world the way you see it, and you can't help that. You know, that's your innate view of life, and I think that's a pretty amazing thing. Like, you could stand 10 people in a row to shoot the same thing, and it's everyone's is going to look different. And I find that cool. It's like painting or anything like that. I mean, I love painting. I love art. I mean, I love looking at art, really. I mean, for people that inspire me, I mean, I think when it's not necessarily like some old school photographer that I've always followed, it's more, for me, it would be a painter. I mean, I love Hockney. I love his swimming pool art. I love his, I mean, I just love his use of color and like the simplicity of it, even though it's probably not simplistic. I mean, I'm not a painter, but I if I could aspire to be another type of artist, like, it would probably be that. Just like the colors and the way it makes me feel. I mean, I can't even explain why I like it. And sometimes when I love art, I don't even know why I love it. And I think that's the beauty of it. And I could love it and someone else could hate it. And that's fine. You know, it's like, exactly. It just, for me, it resonates with me. And I still, like, I was recently in Paris for the summer for the Women's World Cup, which was also amazing. Wow. It was amazing to be a part of that as a woman and just as a female sports photographer. And just the way the world viewed that, I thought was pretty amazing. But I went to Musée d'Orsay, and I wanted to see the Van Goghs there, which are beautiful. And I guess I hadn't been in Paris in 15 years, probably. God, dating myself. But you couldn't bring phones in.
You couldn't take
pictures in a museum, right? So for me, this was the first time I had been in the Parisian museums in this cell phone age. And I was just shocked at, like, how many people were walking around taking photos of all the paintings. It was just so odd to me, because I felt, we're here to look at them. We're not here to look at them through a phone or take a picture of them. It was almost comical in a way. Like, I think I was the only person in the museum
looking
not taking
with your
a picture.
Eyes, not behind a screen.
Yeah, and I'm like, and I'm a photographer. Like, it was just baffling to me. But I really wanted to, like, I wanted to look at the brush strokes, and I wanted to look at the paintings because I love them so much. And I just thought, I hadn't seen them in person in such a long time. But if I could ask Musée d'Orsay to please not allow people to bring phones in, I want to. Because it just made the experience so different. But I guess if you never knew any different, it wouldn't feel like that. But to me, it really was pretty, eye-opening, I guess, to see that. But seeing the paintings there was amazing. And, like, those kind of things inspire me as an artist. Like, whenever I'm feeling, you know, like, uncreative or dull, or like I'm stuck, I like to go do things like that. And it doesn't even have to be like a museum or art. It can be just a beautiful place, you know. And often I don't even take a camera. I don't take a phone, because I just want to look and I want to see it and I want to feel it. Like, I don't actually want to document everything I do or everything I see, because I feel like that can be also detrimental, like, as an artist. Like, you know, I mean, if I'm planning, or if I'm going to do a shoot and I'm looking at a mood board, I do that to some extent, but I also don't do that, because I think you're going to, I don't know, put images in your head that weren't there before, and I don't want to, like, pollute what I might think or do on my own.
So, circling back to LA, you said 10 years, and then you decided to explore
after
outside
that,
of the world.
Yeah, I mean, after that 10 years, I mean, I felt like I had done a lot of things in LA that I wanted to do, and I kind of wanted to change. I mean, that tends to be my personality. I like change, which is probably why I like this job. It's always something different. And so I ended up moving overseas to Australia. So I was based in the outback for a few years in Alice Springs, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere. And that was, I was with my partner at the time, and he was working out there. So it was kind of a mutual decision that we wanted to go and, like, see the world and experience another part of the world. And so that was pretty, pretty crazy because it was like literally in the middle of nowhere, and I didn't know how it would be. Like, I didn't know if I would like it. I didn't know if it would be interesting, if it would just, you know, provide any opportunities, but we were open to whatever it was going to provide.
Yeah. Start everything again.
I mean, start everything again. The network completely. So I didn't really, like, I had some minor connections there, like not really a lot. Like, I didn't have many people to reach out to, but I started working at the local paper there, because I always feel like that's a good start to meet people and to just kind of keep my creative juices flowing, so to speak. And then I also was still working for Corbis at the time, which was a different agency. So I was doing some work for them if it was like an international sporting event or fashion week or something like this that had,
you would fly out.
I would like file to them. So like that helped me with like international coverage. And then I was also like going to Sydney and covering fashion week there, and then doing some things for the Australian newspaper and Sydney Morning Herald when they would need something where I was, like out in the outback.
So you reached out to them directly, or you had
out to them directly and just said, hey, I'm here in this area, and, you know, this is my background, this is my experience. And I think I just would, you know, keep at them if there was like something interesting going on, or if they had a story and they couldn't send someone all the way from Sydney, then they would know I was there and like use me. But I was pretty proactive about it. I mean, I would like reach out and I would kind of harass them to use me. And that was kind of how I started in that world there. And then I happened to know one sports photographer from New York who was working for Getty over in Australia. He was doing like a 2-year kind of exchange, so to speak. And I ran into him at a camel race.
And a camel race?
Yeah.
Did I hear well?
We were both shooting this camel race in Alice Springs, and this guy Ezra from New York happened to be there, and he saw me and I saw him, and I probably hadn't seen him in, you know, 5-10 years, and he was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, what are you doing here? And he was up there covering it for Getty, and I was there covering it for Corbis, which is this kind of competing agency. And he was just like, I didn't even know you were here. And I was like, yeah, I'm based out here for a few years. And so he was like, oh, you should really contact one of the heads for entertainment and sport in Sydney and let them know that you're out here for Getty. And so he kind of helped me get my foot in the door, so to speak, with them. So then I went down to Sydney and I met with Dawn, who was the entertainment editor for Getty Images in Asia Pacific. And then I started doing more entertainment for them, and then consequently more sport for them, until I ended up staying over there for 5+ years and ended up covering, you know, every sport imaginable that's popular in Australia, cricket and rugby and, you know.
Okay, silly question. Do you need to understand the rules of this game?
Yes.
Because I guess you need to know where to shoot.
Well, there's a massive tournament for cricket called the Ashes, which is every year, and then there's Rugby World Cup. I mean, there's many things. And Getty, I remember that was coming up, and they wouldn't let me shoot the cricket finals or the Ashes until I had shot women's cricket for like a year to learn all the rules. And so I was just like, oh God. And it's, for me, I was like, oh man, the sport is like so long. I mean, these, like the matches can last 5 days. I mean, people are sitting in the stands, like reading the paper, having tea, because they're just so long. And so for me, I was like, yeah, the sport.
5 days? Yeah, cricket?
Yeah, they can go for 5 days. Really? And I still feel like I don't even understand all the rules. And I'm not like the biggest cricket fan, to be honest. And so, but the nuances of cricket is like you could sit there for hours, and then something happens. So you're like hyper focused mentally, and it can be exhausting because you're just like waiting for something to happen. And if you look down for 1 second to like change a lens or get a snack, then the one moment happens and you've missed this one moment in like 5 hours. So it wasn't my favorite sport. I mean, I loved being able to cover like motorsport and surfing and F1. I mean, just all these things that I would have never had an opportunity to cover. I got to there, which was just, it was hard, but it was great. You know, I mean, I just was out of my element, but also had to rise to the occasion, which I think is always good when you're in a profession for a long time, like something that scares you and something that maybe you haven't done before and you need to figure it out. So it was great. I mean, I loved that and stayed over there, and ended up from the Outback coming to Melbourne for 2 years and then ultimately Sydney for the last 3 years I was over there, you know, living by the water and surfing and all these things that I miss greatly. But it was a great time in my life and I'm so grateful for it. And so when I came back to the States, I just continued working for Getty over here, and I wanted to come back to New Orleans. It's where my family is and my nieces, and so I really wanted to be here, and they said that was fine, but I was just gonna have to travel quite a bit for other jobs because
you can be located anywhere
basically. These days you can. I mean, I feel like, you know, LA and New York are still kind of the hotbeds for most of the activity, or even a city that has multiple sports teams and multiple, like, you know, events going on. I mean, we do have a lot of things in New Orleans, but we only have basketball and we only have football, so we don't have like a baseball team, we don't have, you know, other pro sports, hockey, things like this. So those things were, maybe they were wanting me in a bigger city, but none that I really felt like going to at the time. So
yeah, but you, just like you said, you went, you know, almost a month in Paris for
the Women's World Cup. Yeah,
that, so was big. You're going to go to cover the Olympic Games.
I will be going to Tokyo in July of 2020. So that's the Summer Games. And that's probably be our biggest group that Getty Images has ever taken to an Olympics, which is pretty cool. So it's probably like the largest coverage we'll have. And I suspect that it'll be a Olympics to remember in Tokyo. I'm excited. And I've been wanting to, I knew that one was coming up for a long time. Like when they, as soon as they announced that it was going to be Tokyo 2020, never been there in my life. Of all the travels I've done, I've never been to Japan. So I'm excited to see that country and that part of the world and how they operate. And I'll probably stay on after to just,
yeah, explore.
Yeah.
You know, and among all your travels, what was your favorite one?
Favorite place?
I mean, if you have a favorite place, there's so many. Yeah,
there's so many. I mean, I'll tell you one that kind of surprised me was probably South Korea. I mean, for the Winter Olympics, that is not a place I had on my radar. I mean, I was never planning on taking a trip there. I was never wanting to really go there, and it ended up being that's where the Winter Olympics were in Pyeongchang, and I got to spend some time in Seoul, and just the people, the food, the culture. It's a great place, and I would highly recommend like spending some time in Seoul in that country. I really loved it, and I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. I would go back, and great skincare products, by the way, too.
I know. My daughter spent 1 month in South Korea in Seoul last summer, and she loved it.
Yes.
And she came back with a lot of these masks.
I mean, it's like their thing there. So I was just constantly like buying skin products and face masks. I would put them on every night after the hard day. If I had like a really long day, I would just lie in bed with one on my face. It was awesome. Yeah, I mean, there, I've also gotten to do some amazing assignments in Greece. I mean, I got to do a fashion shoot in Hydra, which I loved, which is a little island off the coast of Athens, no cars. And it was just really like a simple place, but a beautiful place. And that really gave me an appreciation for like this simple life and how little you really need to be happy. And I still love that place. And I've been back a few times. So I don't know. It's like a special place to me because I never even, again, like I never even knew it existed, I guess, in my mind, you know? And now that I know, I can't get it out.
So when you choose photojournalism, mm-hmm. were you thinking that would be...
That I would have this life I've had? No. No way. I mean,
What were you thinking
when you're younger? I just thought, you know, I thought I love art. I love creativity. I love this access into people's lives I never would have met otherwise. And I think that has, you know, carried on and permeated my whole life and the people I've met and the experiences I've had. I'm so grateful for those things. I mean, I feel like I have friends all over the world. I have colleagues all over the world, and I've gotten to see the whole world because of this job. And for those things, I'm super grateful. And I feel like it's a lot about connections and a lot about the people I've met and the relationships I've made over the years. And you never know, like, who's going to end up where. I mean, you never know, like, if you met this person in your life in your 20s, like, where they're going to be in their 50s and where you're going to be. And you could end up reconnecting and working together in some way. So I tried to always keep those.
Is it a small world?
It is a small world, I think. Yeah, I think it can be. Yes, for sure. I mean, like, because a lot of, and it's unfortunate when newspaper kind of went downhill, like how many of those creative people that I knew that were amazing photographers ended up going into a completely different profession. So I'm lucky that I got to stay and persevere in this career and life that I love, you know, because it's not always easy and it is competitive. And you always have to keep like changing and growing with the business because it's always changing. And I think it's just important to, you know, keep doing what you love and keep stay your path, you know, like not get caught up in the trends of what's going on. Cause I think sometimes like as an artist or as a creative person, you can be swayed by that. And I think if you stay your course and stay your path, like it's a lot more authentic in the end, you know?
So what is rewarding in your work? I mean, you've been published in very, very big publication like The Times, New York Weeks. Yeah. I mean,
what's rewarding?
What is the most rewarding? Is being published in big magazines or
it I is? Think that still feels good to like see your images in print or see them out there in the world, you know, that what you're covering is getting some recognition and just being shown. I mean, I think especially with the Women's World Cup, for instance, I mean, that got a lot of coverage all over the world. And I think that was pretty cool to be a part of and to see, so that when you're covering these things, I mean, it's a lot of work. It is hard and it is long hours. And we have a crew of many people behind us, like editors and...
Yeah, you told me that was amazing. That was instant.
Yeah, we were instantaneous. So we would actually send straight from the pitch from our cameras to the editors in London, and they would send our images out, like, and so it would almost be instantaneous or within seconds. And that's a service that Getty Images provides like none other. So our images were being like streamed into the world as
in no time,
as they happened. So like there was a goal, there was a score, there's a celebration. I mean, that's out there, you know, like it was just that kind of thing is amazing. And like, so that the whole inner workings of that and how that all comes together and like the group of people working hard to get those images out, it's nice for that to be recognized and for that to be shown to the world. And then once that message gets out there, like with all these, you know, these amazing women playing the sport, and then that led to so many other things like politically and pay wise and it made me happy to be a part of that, like to see that I played some small part in that. So yeah, that's rewarding for sure.
Yeah. So we're talking about one niche for you is sports, but yes. You also do a lot of food photography.
I do. I love doing the food photography. It's something I've been doing more and more of since I lived here. So probably like the last 5 or 6 years. And I always try to shoot it like I would shoot anything, you know, like I would shoot a fashion model or like I would shoot, you know, a great sports you know, legend. I mean, I try to make it as beautiful as it can be and find the beautiful light and still make it art at the end of the day, you know. I mean, it's an inanimate object, so it's almost like it's funny because it's quiet and it's still and it's not like any other thing I cover. And so for me, that's nice. It's like peaceful in a way. It's like it's not, you know, you don't have all these extenuating circumstances or factors, but it's also hard. I mean, I think sometimes like it's also really tough, like challenging.
It's a lot of details.
It's a lot of details and attention to detail and like, and also just finding the right angles and making something look beautiful and making it look appealing to someone that they'd want to, you know, eat it or enjoy it or having it show the restaurant that it's in.
And, you know, you and I were talking about it, but when you do food photography or interior photography, you have, it's like a partnership with someone. Mm-hmm. You have, most of the time, you have a stylist.
Yeah.
Which is, we don't see, you know, behind a beautiful food photography,
there's
we don't
a
see a lot of work,
right.
A lot of things going on.
But there is. I mean, and it's funny because I think people see these beautiful images all the time and they really don't understand, like, the work that goes into getting that one picture. I mean, it's a lot of hours. It's a lot of, you know,
focus, knowledge,
yeah,
skills,
everything. I mean, and I've worked with some amazing stylists, food stylists, prop stylists, makeup artists, hair. I mean, all of these people behind the scenes that go into making a beautiful image and helping me make a beautiful image. I mean, it's amazing. Like, and I'm lucky that I have a kind of access to people, talented people like that. It definitely helps.
And, you know, kind of being annoying with you. We have a new iPhone coming up now. Yes. With free lens. So I don't know, there is magic about photography.
Tell me, what's it can do? Is it going to put me out of business?
No, people are maybe, you know, confused about, you know, that being a photographer, right. It takes more than just having a beautiful iPhone with incredible, you know.
Yes, my sister always says to me, she's like, oh, that you must have a really good camera. And I always tell her that's funny because I'm like, no, it's not the camera. It's the person behind the camera. And yes, I mean, I feel like everyone has a camera and everyone has a phone that takes pictures, but it doesn't necessarily make you a professional photographer. And I mean, I always liken it to that, the same thing as like when paint by number came out, you know, and everybody was like, oh, and I'm like, oh, I'm a painter now, but it's not the same. I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, you are, but you aren't. And I think it's great that everyone's taking pictures. I mean, I think it's making the world a more visual place, but I don't find, I'm not like threatened by that, and it doesn't like scare me or worry me. I know. I mean, it's just funny to me because I'm like, well, yeah, everyone has a camera, but it doesn't mean they use it, or it doesn't mean they even, you know, want to per se. So yeah, I guess I'll be all right. I don't even have that new phone. I probably won't for a long time. I'm always the last to get the updated iPhone. I swear. I get like the last version every like a year late. So I'll probably not even know what all it does.
But do you use your iPhone?
I do. I use it. Yeah. I mean, if I'm on a trip or vacation, I don't feel like lugging around a camera, I take it. I think it's a great tool. I mean, I definitely use it, and I think they take amazing pictures. And it's nice. I mean, we always say the best camera is the one you have with you. Like, that's such an old like photojournalism adage, you know.
Yes.
It's like an old saying. And so yeah, I mean, you could always, I mean, you never know what's going to happen in front of you. Like, and you should always have your camera with you, they say, if you're like a good photo J. School. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, if you miss something, they'd be like, what? Where was your camera? You're like, oh, I left it in the locker room, or I left it in the classroom. So I think having the phone is handy for sure. Like, when you're walking around, just for happy snaps. But like I said, a lot of times I like to walk around without it too. I think that's important as an artist.
Well, Mariana, thank you so much for, you know, describing your life as a photographer.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here. I'm happy to talk about it and share. And thanks for having this podcast. It's great.
Thank you to Mariana for taking the time to meet with me and discuss her creative journey. It was a real pleasure. If you would like to learn more about Mariana, visit her website at marianamasset.com. For more information, you can also follow her on Instagram at mmimages. This podcast is an ongoing creative conversation for anyone who looks around and sees the added texture in their world and wants to know more about who's doing it. Be sure to share textures with your friends and community. Find your preferred listening platform at valerielegras.com/podcast or listen to us on Spotify. Follow so that you don't miss new episodes. Thank you for listening. À bientôt.